Hello, folks, and welcome to Leaky Weekly, on the show where we dive into the last week or so of news in the world of data leaks, cybercrime, and the dark web. Now, before we get started, given that this is our first episode, I think an important disclaimer is in order. A lot of what we talk about when we're talking about cyber criminals, the dark web, and the world of cybercrime involves claims made maybe to journalists by threat actors, maybe by security researchers, or maybe by threat actors themselves in forum posts, in posts in various chat applications and whatnot. So it's important to approach each story with a healthy degree of skepticism, because at times it turns out that a cyber criminal maybe doesn't have access to the kind of data they thought they did. Turns out it's test data, not production data. Maybe turns out they didn't have the access they thought they did. Or at times the claims can turn out to be outright fantasy. So instead of pointing and laughing when someone is a victim of a major data leak or data breach that ends up in these underground communities, we should be doing a little more patting on the back. With that said, I'm your host, Nick Ascoli. There's absolutely nothing on these papers. And let's get into our first story. To kick us off, there was a pretty major story this week that the text and call records, evidently billions of text and call records of millions of AT&T customers have leaked. Now, the timeline here is quite a doozy, and the number of characters involved is substantial. So let's walk through the timeline here. So there's a threat actor who reaches out to a security researcher named Reddington. Now, Wired has an outstanding article outlining all of this. I encourage you to read it. They named the threat actor in their post. I'm going to refrain from doing that until the story plays out more and we see court proceedings, because they're not using an alias, they're using the actual name. But this threat actor reaches out to a security researcher who goes by Reddington. And they sort of, I'm not sure if it was a jab or a joke, or if they're friendly with each other, or if it was intimidation, but they say, I have your call records, and they send them a sampling of call records. And Reddington goes, wow, yeah, those are actually calls that I've made. How'd you get this? And Reddington explains that they compromised a Snowflake tenant that didn't have multi-factor authentication turned on, which is a part of a whole nother story that we'll talk about after this one. And they were able to access all of this data that was living in this Snowflake tenant. And they evidently sent the data to a few people, one of them being a member of Shiny Hunters. Now, fast forward a little bit. Reddington tells Mandiant about what they found. Mandiant tells AT&T, and then AT&T files an SEC filing outlining the situation and also claiming that a threat actor in association with the leak has been arrested. Now, the original person who reached out to Reddington, who is named in the article, was arrested, but in connection with a T-Mobile breach from several months ago. Or several years ago, actually. So this is sort of an interesting timeline. They weren't necessarily arrested in connection with the AT&T breach, but they have been arrested in connection with another mobile, communications provider incident. But nonetheless, they are in jail. Now, AT&T goes through Reddington to contact Shiny Hunters. And the way this plays out is AT&T pays Shiny Hunters, and Reddington evidently gets a little cut here, pays Shiny Hunters somewhere in the range of 5 Bitcoin, around $370,000, to get them to delete their copy of the data. The Shiny Hunters member sends a video of them deleting the data. Who knows if they have other copies? They delete it. They send this video back. Evidently, Wired gets a hold of this video as well and sees that the person did, in fact, show a video of them deleting a copy of the AT&T call log data. But Shiny Hunters also goes on later to tell, I think, several news outlets that that data was originally shared by the threat actor in question with several people, one of them being this member of Shiny Hunters. So it's unclear if there are still copies floating around that are maybe, going to be cleaned up, or maybe the purpose of the payment is to try and get several people, whoever has a copy of it, to come forward and also be paid. But this is a pretty interesting developing story. There's a lot of people speculating on the kinds of things that can be done with these call logs. Contained within them is metadata about the call. Some of them apparently have cell tower local ping, so whatever cell tower was involved in the relay, so you can sort of geolocate where a call took place from its members, among all other sorts of pieces of metadata about the call. Now, there's no descriptions about the text message records in there, but they're mentioned very briefly, but the only thing talked about between Reddington and the Shiny Hunters member is call records. So we'll see how that develops. We'll see what shakes out. We'll see what additional details come out. But nonetheless, a very impactful and developing story. Now, what I want to talk about next, I think, is a good segue from the AT&T incident, and it's what's going on at Snowflake. There have been stories about Snowflake tenants being leaked. There was a major incident with Ticketmaster, with Santander Bank, with several others. There are claims that just north of 100 companies have been involved with leaking data from Snowflake tenants that have been accessed by unauthorized third parties. It basically, the situation here is that the way the story is playing out, at least, is that InfoStealer logs, which contain logins to various Snowflake tenants, are being enumerated by threat actors, most notably Shiny Hunters, who's posted several major leaks and asked for payment to prevent them from releasing them in association with compromised Snowflake instance credentials. Now, what the InfoStealers do, if you're not familiar with how InfoStealers work, when an InfoStealer lands on a device, say you hired a contractor, say your company is a Snowflake customer, you have a Snowflake tenant, and your development team hires a contractor to work on the data pipeline of data shipping into Snowflake. Now, this contractor operates, they're independent, they operate off of a personal device, and one day they get creative and want to download Photoshop to edit some pictures. So they download a cracked free version from a BitTorrent site, and lo and behold, within the installer, like they download it, they get access to Photoshop, but within the installer that installed Photoshop, there was an InfoStealer. And what the InfoStealer does is collect all of the credentials they've saved to their browsers, all of the cookie sessions that are active or inactive, all the cookie files that they could find, the browsing history for the device, all manner of metadata about the device, any interesting files, and uploads it, potentially to maybe a forum or a Telegram channel where threat actors pay for access to multiple devices, you know, logs on a daily or weekly basis. So that's how the credentials showed up. This isn't necessarily something that's the fault of Snowflake. I mean, there have been lots of conversations where the blame thrown towards Snowflake has been that they don't have multi-factor authentication on as a default setting. I'm sure something in that world is changing of default configurations, but it's Snowflake's fault in the same way that an S3 bucket leaking, being exposed to the public, is Amazon's fault, which is, it's kind of not. It's maybe it would be better if they had default, more secure configurations, but a lot of them are moving in that direction. But it is the user who configured the S3 bucket or the Snowflake tenant and didn't have the multi-factor authentication turned on, or misconfigured the S3 bucket and made it public, that really have caused the contents of whatever it is to be made available to an unauthorized third party. So I wouldn't be throwing blame at Snowflake. This is a configuration issue, really. So another interesting story that is continuing to develop. I think there's been a lot of investigation done by Mandiant and Snowflake together. A lot of that research has been published, and I'll link it below. But I encourage you to check it out, understand the impact of InfoStealers, understand, you know, if you are a Snowflake customer, how to detect if your instance may have been unauthorized, accessed by an unauthorized third party. And we'll see how this one develops as well. In another major story from this week, SiegSec, notorious hacktivist group that's been very active over the last couple of years, hacked the Heritage Foundation, one of the most prominent American political think tanks, posted all of their data in addition to a Telegram chat with some of their leadership to their Telegram group, and then disbanded shortly after, basically saying that heat is getting too hot and they need to lay low for a little bit. To give you an idea of what SiegSec has been up to in the last couple of years, they typically get behind a cause for maybe a month or a couple months in like operations, op, whatever. They'll hit a couple targets, the major targets, some of the larger names over the last several campaigns. Atlassian, NATO was posted recently. You know, they'll target a bunch of companies who have donated to some political cause, or a bunch of companies who stand in firm ideological opposition to some values that SiegSec holds dear. So the Heritage Foundation is definitely one of them. They stand in firm opposition to them. And they posted a Telegram chat with a member of the leadership of the Heritage Foundation, who said that they were tracking down members of SiegSec. It remains to be seen if that is the case, but nonetheless, SiegSec disbanded shortly after. Again, a major event in the world of hacktivism, as they've been a very prominent, very active group in the news cycle for a while. the leadership, VO specifically, which you can read all of this in content written by the Daily Dot, who's been covering them forever. They also did a Reddit AMA with VO, who's the leader of SiegeSec, which I definitely encourage you to read. It's very enlightening about, you know, TTPs and thoughts behind the group. So VO basically said the FBI has most likely been watching them for a while, and they're a little worried about the targeting. They say in the AMA also that they know it's a matter of time before they go to jail. It's most likely going to happen at some point, maybe soon. So I think it seems like they're trying to sort of stave off the inevitable by at least disbanding now while they know the FBI has eyes on them, and seeing how things shake out, letting things cool off, maybe before returning. You see activist groups come and go all the time, or maybe splitting off and all going and doing their own thing. Or as Vio said, they're interested in potentially leaving the world of cybercrime behind. They say they have a few times, but have always come back. So it remains to be seen what happens, but we'll see how that shakes out, if any arrests are made, if the Heritage Foundation does indeed manage to track and maybe dox some of the members. But another developing story and major shakeup in the hacktivist world that we'll keep an eye on. For our next and final story, Disney was hacked this week in an apparent anti-AI motivated attack. A group called Null Bulge accessed Disney Slack and downloaded all of its contents. Now, Null Bulge is a hacktivist group protecting artists' rights and ensuring fair compensation for their work. That's in their words. And in a number of articles about them this week, the Wired one was great. I definitely would check that out. But Null Bulge claims to stand in opposition to a few things, namely cryptocurrency, I guess just in general, and the use of AI in, you know, the commission of creative works. Now, apparently this has been a discussion within Disney about the use of AI. Null Bulge is very upset about this, and they put them in their lens and attack them. So there's two prominent methods that Null Bulge claims were involved. One was an insider who gave Null Bulge access to the Disney corporate Slack. Actually, the same insider is also said to have cut them off from access and stopped communicating with them, which they got very upset about, and they doxed the individual who had originally helped them out. The Wired article also claims something which is not elaborated on much, so I'm not sure what the details are there, but that there were info stealers involved. Now, again, shady on the details, but in general, you know, the access to a corporate SaaS tool via credentials found in info stealers is certainly not an unheard of technique. So, you know, I don't exactly cast much doubt on access being gained through info stealers. Now, the leak contained 1.1 terabytes of Slack messages, files, code, unreleased projects, documentation, you name it, across some 10,000 Slack channels. Now, toting file size is usually not that useful. Like a threat actor can say they got access to 1 terabyte of files from some company, but a couple of 8K, you know, high-res video files can probably reach a terabyte pretty quickly. So you really want to see more what is the data, not necessarily the size of it. Now, in this case, Slack messages, you have to imagine, on disk are pretty small. 1 terabyte of message files is probably quite a bit. So there is a lot of stuff in there. If you read around in discussions in various communities, you'll find that a lot of people are saying an overwhelming majority of the content is just internal communications, nothing interesting in it. But we'll see what findings come out, what journalists, you know, purport that they found in them as people start to peruse through the leak, which Null Bulge posted to their blog for free. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening to this episode of Leaky Weekly. Sorry if we missed your favorite story from the last week. There were simply too many to cover. This podcast was brought to you by Flare, the world's easiest to use and most comprehensive cybercrime dataset that integrates into your security program in 30 minutes. Sign up for a free trial, linked in the podcast description below, to try it yourself. And we'll see you on the next one.